Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I was trying to think of anything.
Do you know that it's National Teacher Day today?
Yes, I did, because I baked banana bread for my son's preschool teachers. I know.
You, who cannot cook, baked
you know
banana
what?
Bread?
It's so funny. I make this banana bread, and every person on the planet who ever eats it is like, this is amazing. I need the recipe. I wink. I'm like, yeah, I put some flour in my face. Of this, you know, I work so hard. And then if they ask me again, my rule is then I finally tell them it's the Trader Joe's
from
mix.
A box.
Yes.
Yes.
But hey, to me, it's cooking. If I have to, like, put
best.
Eggs in there.
Oh, that's it. Yeah,
no.
I know. I love fudge brownies. Betty Crocker.
Oh, it's good stuff, so right? Good.
You know, it's also May is Mental Health Awareness Month.
That's right.
This is all about us today.
Yes, exactly.
Did you have a good week?
Yeah, I was trying to think if there's anything like crazy or nuts, and no, everything was pretty good, thank God. Nothing. I feel like there's something, maybe.
There's always something.
There's always. But so nothing on the top of my head. How about you? What, anything crazy?
Back to my usual insanity, yes. I was getting my car serviced on Friday, and in the meantime, got a call from Christopher's daughter, was coming in last minute from Chicago, forgot to tell us,
and
she was going to be staying down in Newport Beach. So we changed all of our plans on Saturday and drove to Newport Beach, got a hotel, stayed overnight so we could get to see her, because we don't get to see her that much.
Yeah.
It was since last June that
we
saw her.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's so nice.
Yeah, she's working at a trauma burn center as a nurse.
I cannot even imagine.
Yeah. She's got high tolerance for lots of pain. She says it's like the only field where you're basically, you give people all these pain medicine, right? And then you're still inflicting torture on them when you're trying to save their lives.
Oh,
just awful.
Oh, my God. I can't
as you
imagine.
Say,
horrible.
What's like, you with horrible? Did you just say horrible?
Horrible.
Horrible. That's
no, I said it the way that you say it.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Okay. You say horrible. I say horrible. Okay.
All right. So let's talk about last week. Really, really interesting. So we had Tanya Brown, who is the youngest sister of the late Nicole Brown Simpson. And she wrote the book Finding Peace Amid the Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide.
She was such a nice lady, you know. So
fantastic.
So has been through so many things in her life and just sounded so grounded.
Well, that's what I loved about. I really applauded her for her honesty and really helping people and sort of, you know, taking away the stigma of having a mental health issue and things like that. So I mean, she was really candid about her depression and suicide and kind of what she went through. So she was great. Really, really kind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you're just beaming because we have a very special guest and another special guest in here today. So you can go ahead and do the intro.
Okay. So I'm so excited. This is actually my cousin, and her name is Dr. Tanya Altman, and she's with her co-author of the book, What to Feed Your Baby, Beth Sauls. So I'm going to read the profile for both of them. So Tanya Altman is a practicing pediatrician who founded Calabasas Pediatrics, and an assistant clinical professor at Mattel Children's Hospital at UCLA. She's also an American Academy of Pediatrics spokesperson and sits on the editorial advisory board for ShareCare. As a network television expert, she often appears on the Today Show and Fox News. Dr. Tanya blogs for many popular parenting sites and has been featured in Newsweek, USA Today, the LA Times, Parents, and People magazine. She's the author of Mommy Calls, Dr. Tanya Answers Parents' Top 101 Questions About Babies and Toddlers, and she's the editor-in-chief of Caring for Your Baby and Young Child, Birth to Age 5. She lives in Los Angeles with her family. And Beth Sauls is a registered dietitian, chef, and mommy of two. She specializes in both adult and pediatric nutrition. She also loves to cook and teach cooking classes, emphasizing easy, nutritious family meals, which I'm very excited to talk about. Beth believes in a non-judgmental and supportive approach, not one size fits all. She's written many articles, has been interviewed for numerous health magazines, and the co-author for What to Feed Your Baby, which was just published in April 2016. Find her recipes, grocery guides, and a healthy and humorous nutrition blog at www.nutritioninthekitchen.org. Welcome,
guests. Hi.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Dr. Deborah.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So tell us about, you know, what inspired writing this book?
Well, I've been a practicing pediatrician now for 15 years, and I have three boys of my own. And when I had my first, I exposed him to everything, just like I talked to all my families about. And then my second came along, and I think he got dragged to a few too many birthday parties early on and exposed to things that maybe weren't quite so nutritious. And so he developed taste buds for those more like kid food sweet treats. And that's sort of when I realized there's something going on here. There's a pattern. And so I started working with every family that came into my office, taking food diaries, consulting with Beth about patients and clients she was seeing in her office as a dietitian. And we came up with this list of 11 foundation foods that every baby needs. And if you feed your baby and toddler these foods regularly, we guarantee that you will create a veggie-loving, no-fuss, healthy-eating child.
That's incredible.
Can you give us a teaser of some of the 11?
So the foods that we like the most are basic foods that have one ingredient. So if you think of any one ingredient food like fish and nuts and chicken and berries, so basically we kind of have to go backwards into very short ingredients list foods and one ingredient foods. And we picked 11 that we thought were really, really important, such as fish, avocado, nuts, just to name a few.
Did broccoli make the list?
Green vegetables. Definitely on the list. And I think it's important for parents to note that these are foods that you can feed a baby at 6 months of age. You don't have to wait. It's perfectly okay to give wild salmon to your six-month-old. Pureed avocado is one of my favorite first foods. Uh-huh. And peanut butter oatmeal. We know now that you want to get peanut products and all the what we used to think of as highly allergic foods in early, because it will likely prevent food allergies. And there's some great research coming out on this. Whereas what we used to hold off, the allergies in this country skyrocketed. So yes, it's probably the pediatrician's fault because we used to hold off on it. So now we're going backwards and we're saying, you know what, get all this healthy food in early in a consistency your baby can handle.
What I had heard was in Israel, they give like a candy to little kids that has peanuts in it. And didn't they do studies that those kids had like the least peanut allergies ever, or something like it, right?
So it's called Bomba. It's not a candy. It's a peanut puff. So it's like picture Pirate's Booty, but peanut flavored.
Oh.
And it has peanut protein in it. And it's what they use as a teething biscuit in Israel. And this is sort of where they started to realize, like, hey, we don't really have peanut and nut allergies in Israel. I wonder why. Maybe it's because we're introducing it early. And so you can get Bomba here in this country at most grocery stores now. There's also a U.S. version called Cheeky Monkey, which is organic and non-GMO. And I love it. And my boys all love to eat it. Or I recommend that my families make peanut butter oatmeal for six-month-olds. You melt 1 teaspoon of smooth, creamy peanut butter into baby oatmeal, add some extra liquid so it's not too sticky, and you feed it 3 times a week, just like they did in the LEAP study that you were mentioning.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It does.
Yeah, it really does. I'm like, make that for me, you know? It really does. It sounds delicious.
Well, I would imagine that a lot of the basic principles for what to feed your baby would apply to adults as well.
So that is the most important point. Because when you have a six-month-old and you're starting to feed your baby, a lot of parents have this mindset. They go into the baby food aisle and they're just buying jars and pouches and special things. So now there's a lot of toddler products and preschooler products and kid products. And it really creates this mindset for parents that kids eat separately than adults. Mm. And that is one of the biggest mistakes that parents can make. So as soon as you possibly can, one of the best things you can do for you and your whole family is actually to start serving your kids what the rest of the family is eating. Now, a lot of parents aren't even feeding themselves correctly.
That's right.
So often my patients will feed their kids food and then scrounge around their pantry for some crackers or whatever they happen to eat. So they're not even feeding themselves properly. So we really want also in the book to really get the message with meal plans and recipes and helpful hints to help the whole family eat better.
So I love what you say, and I totally agree with it. And what do you do if you have a child like mine who, like, I make all this healthy food and they won't even attempt to eat it? Now, are you of the schooling of, you know, come on, this is it, this is what we're serving, you know, kind of old school style? Or it's like, all right, I'll be a shorthand cook and make what you want. What do you think about kids who are super picky who just won't even attempt it?
I have so many thoughts on this topic. So first, a lot of parents have joined the food police. Mm-hmm. And I tell all parents to stop the food police and instead become a peaceful plater.
Okay.
P-L-A-T-E-R.
Oh, that's cute.
So you don't want to force. You don't want to bribe. You don't want to pay your child to eat certain things. I even heard a show once where someone made their child eat everything in a clockwise manner. One bit of this and one bite of this. So really, we need to back off and first realize that our job as parents, our number one feeding job, is to offer good food to our kids. Then the child's job is to have this food in front of them and then decide from what is offered what and how much they want to eat. So that's really a way to back up and make sure that your foundation is correct.
Okay.
So you wouldn't that if a child is served, let's say, broccoli and some chicken and some brown rice, and that's in front of them, and that's what the family's eating, and then the child says, I'm not eating any of that, what would you do then?
I would say, so first this takes some coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes some commitment, because we as parents are scared that our child's going to be hungry.
Yes.
So this takes some preparation and some coaching. But basically, for example, last night I made several foods. My 8-year-old did not want to eat the chicken, so she ate 2.5 ears of corn on the cob and half an apple. No chicken, and she had some water. And I had to be okay with that.
Uh-huh.
Now, my sort of ace in the hole is that I do a healthy bedtime snack. So what you were saying mm-hmm. about being a shorter to cook, you don't want to do that. So
right.
we need rules.
Yeah.
So we prepare dinner, and that's dinner. However, your little ace in the hole a couple hours later is that you can offer a healthy bedtime snack. For me last night, I think it was healthy popcorn and sliced banana, something like that.
Yogurt and fresh fruit.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Nuts. Just something nothing with fake colors or long ingredients. Something healthy.
Sure.
So, and that also, that can't be based on dinner performance. I don't think dessert should be based on dinner performance. Mm-hmm. We're really micromanaging our kids, and instead of letting them learn how to healthfully regulate what they're eating.
Sure.
And we have a whole chapter on picky eaters in the book.
Yes.
And the different types of picky eaters and how to treat them. But also what I like to do is prevent this. And that's why when I see parents that have the babies and toddlers in my office, one of the best things you can do to prevent having a picky eater later on, which, sometimes they come when the kids mm-hmm. are already picky, but to prevent it is to really introduce all these foods that we're talking about early and frequently. And as a parent, you are the best role model for your child.
Yes.
So if you're not eating green vegetables, your child's not going to eat green vegetables. So even if you need to fake it, you need to eat these foods in front of them and get them involved. Take them to the farmer's market. Help them cook. Beth has all these great tips in the book on at what age your child can do different things in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
It's called Kids in the Kitchen Tips.
That's
to help
smart.
Get them involved. Because often if your child helps make it and you name it after them, like Zoe's vegetable lasagna, and let them present it to Daddy and the rest of the family, then they're more
so
likely
cute.
To try it.
Yes, that's a really good tip.
What Tanya said is so funny, because just last night I was making fish, which is a sort of, and the chicken. Fish is a little hard sell in my household. But I prepped my husband ahead of time and he was great. I said, I'm making fish. Please be very positive. Please do not come in and say, what is that fish smell? And he was great and he tried a bite. Mm-hmm. And later, my 10-year-old, who has never eaten fish before in her entire 10 years on this earth, she said to me, well, if Daddy tried it, it's probably okay. And she took a bite and her conclusion was, not bad. Which
is good. Exactly.
It was a huge win.
It was a huge win. I was really
great.
Happy.
And that's one of the reasons why I say to get fish in early. And salmon is really, wild salmon is one of the healthiest things you can give to 6 to 12 month olds, because they need all that healthy fat for brain development, the uh-huh. omega-3s. But the reason most older kids and adults don't like fish, and my husband's one of them, is because they didn't get used to it as a child.
Sure. Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I can attest to the forcing children to eat does not work. I was a really picky eater, and my parents would make me sit at the table until everybody was gone to sleep, and I'd just have to sit at that table with the food in front of me until I would just sleep at the table, and and it just created power struggles, and then I had became anorexic, and it was like, you're gonna make me eat, I'll show you.
I mean,
just a terrible thing. But I can see that so many parents, they do get so worried, not even so much that their kids are going to be hungry, but they're going to be malnourished if they don't like protein or they don't.
I promise your kids will not starve, but you brought up a very important point that we want to raise our children with a healthy relationship with food. And that's one of the things that we talk about in this book and Beth speaks about a lot, is that it's more about the relationship. And so that way you're eating healthy at the times where you should be eating in those time zones. She calls them toddler time zones in the book. And if they're, you know, they didn't eat what they're supposed to, but they're hungry, you know, there's another time zone because snack time zone coming up in an hour. It's okay. These are your healthy options then.
Yes. It's really smart. That's really smart.
So what? So what's the thinking on sugar these days?
It can't be good.
And the artificial sweeteners versus, let's say, stevia and all of that. What's your current knowledge about that?
I think everything in moderation. So anything that you make at home in your kitchen. So when you make that banana bread at home, or you make that cake for your child's birthday. It's homemade is always better than what you can buy at the grocery store. And yes, there are going to be times where you have dessert as a family, and that's okay. I'm not anti-sugar. But I do prefer that parents really try to focus on the whole foundation foods and try not to have processed foods with a lot of added sweeteners and colors as much as possible. Beth has these great rules. She says, you know, no fake colors. So when my kids go to buy cereal, I say, okay, you can buy any cereal you want in the cereal aisle as long as there's 3 grams of fiber and no fake colors. You don't even have to look at the sugar content then, because if there's a good amount of fiber and there's no fake or artificial colors, you're almost guaranteed a healthier choice.
Yeah, sure.
Beth also likes to teach my boys to count ingredients and tell them about your ingredient rule, Beth.
So my basic rule that I teach to very young children who I see and their parents, people of all ages, is 5 or less is best and more than 10, think again. And for very young kids who can't really pronounce all of the ingredients, I tell them that you can count the commas. I don't know.
Smart.
Can we say a name brand?
Yeah. Sure.
So Triscuits, for example, they have 3 ingredients. I think it's a great food, high in fiber, very natural, 3 ingredients. Fabulous. Hot Cheetos, for example, I think they're close to 40 ingredients.
Wow. Whoa.
So really, the numbers on the food label can be really manipulated. And if you just look at sugar grams on the label, it's very difficult to figure out what's added versus what's natural. But foods with a very long ingredients list also have a lot of hidden sources of sugar. You mentioned artificial sweeteners. My personal belief is that children should not be consuming artificial sweeteners unless they have a specific health concern worked out with the pediatrician, dietitian,
like diabetes
and so on. Right. But for the most part, I think that artificial sweeteners are not appropriate for children. They're extra, extra, extra ultra sweet, thousands of times sweeter than sugar, and it really developed your palate to expect a sort of different level of
sweetness.
Taste.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Sweetness.
But what about stevia?
Well, again, you know, as Beth, and I don't mind stevia for adults, but as Beth has said, for kids, you know, one of the reasons why I like to keep kids away from sweet tasting things as long as possible is because that's what their brain will grow to develop. For instance, water. Plain water is one of my 11 foundation foods.
Yes.
It's not even really a food. But when you get a 6-month-old, 9-month-old, 12-month-old used to the taste of plain water, they grow into a toddler who likes to drink plain water and an older elementary school child and an adult who likes plain water. Whereas if you give them a flavored water early on, no matter what that flavor is, if it has that sweet taste, that's what they're going to want, and they really don't need it.
Now, can you reverse it? So let's say that you come in, the mom has given sweets to their kids, and they're kind of like on this new health kick, but their kids are sort of used to all that. Can you reverse it, and how?
100% definitely yes.
Okay.
In my own pantry, for example, we used to buy pancake syrup like Aunt Jemima, Log Cabin, whatever. Well, you know, you can only take one battle at a time. So you prioritize. And so maybe a few years ago, I thought to myself, I'm done with the syrup. I want the real Vermont good maple syrup. So I just kind of, without saying anything, just made it disappear. And now the other maple syrup is there. And that's what they use without a thought. I think we talk things to death. You don't have to lecture your child about the evils of maple syrup. For most young children, if it just goes away, then
they don't think about it.
They don't think about it. Yeah. For cereal, one of my best tricks for cereal for parents, besides following the ingredient rules, is to get clear, hard containers, glass or plastic, whatever. I have plastic Rubbermaid containers. and I pour the cereal into there, and it removes the allure of the colorful box and the mascot. Ooh, and then it like sort that. Of all looks the same.
Yes.
Because if they're looking at that Lucky Charms box, it's exciting.
Yes.
It's really exciting and fun
Lucky
for them
Charms.
To read.
I know, so do I.
They are quite delicious.
Yeah, exactly.
But I haven't
but
had
you make a really good
years.
Point because yeah. it's so
sure.
funny because my husband is upset. My husband's like a small child and he loves cereal. So for Father's Day one year, I bought him like one of those, you like can turn it. You put like almost like hotels have, you know, you put the cereal in and turn it. And so I got him that. We still use it, but I haven't been putting stuff in, and my kids have been gravitating. I mean, I buy like the healthy Fruit Loops from like Whole Foods, so it's no artificial, but so, you know, they can have that once in a while. But I've noticed that my kids will gravitate toward that box, but now I just put it in
they
the clear
do.
Thing,
yes.
and it's been better. That is
marketing.
So interesting.
My 15-month-old has learned how to open the cupboard and go in and pull down the cereal boxes that he thinks look
oh,
nice.
Cool.
That is
and granted,
so
every
funny.
Cereal in my house is a healthy option,
yeah.
but some are healthier than others, and some are
yes.
too hard for him at his age and might be a choking hazard, but the ones with the cute animals on them, he'll just pull down.
Yeah,
he'll start knocking at them until they come out, and I replace it with, you know, the Cheerios or whatever I want him to have. So that is a
yeah.
very good point.
I love that.
I also really, instead of focusing on what your kids can't have, I like to really focus on what they can have. And when I talk to families about, listen, I want to make sure you get a good source of protein in the morning. I want to make sure your child's having a good source of calcium, and I have them check off the boxes of all the things they need throughout the day, and I say, if you eat all these servings of what I call my healthy foods,
mm-hmm.
you can have extra stuff at the end, but they're often not hungry for that
sure.
extra stuff.
Right.
So instead of saying you can't have that, I'd say, you know, why don't we have this instead? Did you have your protein yet? Did you have
mm-hmm.
your fruit? Did you have
mm-hmm.
your veggie? And they're usually not hungry at the end for the extra stuff.
That's great. Yeah.
I think what's really important, I completely agree with everything Dr. Tanya mentioned. When I go out to birthday parties and things like that, kids are eating sugar all day long,
oh.
and the parents don't even realize it. So when
God.
You stop at the coffee place in the morning and they get a Frappuccino and a muffin,
mm-hmm.
you're already at 30 grams of sugar. So in the book, we have this sugar makeover before and after. And really, flavored oatmeal and
yeah.
yogurt drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there are really hidden sources of sugar mm-hmm. all day long, and it really trains our taste buds
yes.
to be used to an ultra-sweet taste. So it's definitely possible to reverse it. You don't have to do everything all at once. We do what we're ready for in increments. If I have a patient in my office, I'll kind of negotiate with them. So many ways to get the whole family on board to eating more healthfully.
And what I often negotiate with my kids that are maybe addicted to a sugar cereal or Pop-Tarts, and they of course came to see me because they're getting headaches every day, and I know why. So my rule is no sugar before noon.
Oh.
And eat protein for breakfast in the morning. And
yes.
I'll say, you know what? If you have to have that sugar cereal, we're going to do it as an after-school snack.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go to only having it twice a week. Or we're going to mix it with a healthier cereal choice. But I really try to remove the sugar from the morning and not say you can never have it, but
mm-hmm.
none before noon.
Oh, that's really smart. Can you give our listeners a couple protein options in the morning? I know a lot of people don't like eggs. So what else do you recommend
sure.
for protein?
Well, one of the reasons people don't like eggs is because it's really hard to make in the morning, right?
Yes.
So you can make scrambled eggs or an omelet the night before, or healthy
uh-huh.
French toast. Keep it in the fridge for a couple days and pop it in the microwave. And my boys, even though they used to not like scrambled eggs, when they realized they could eat it with toast as a sandwich,
oh.
all of a sudden it changed their tune, and now they love egg sandwiches. Greek yogurt is another good source of protein. In the morning, milk. You can just add milk to cereal, and that's a great source of protein.
Mm-hmm.
Nuts. I have a lot of vegetarian and vegan families, and I'll have them give their kids almond butter on a whole grain bread, or
mm-hmm.
just a handful of almonds as they're running out the door. What other suggestions, Beth?
I think a smoothie is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Because when we say no sugar before noon, Dr. Tanya and I are talking about no added sugar.
Right.
So fruit is sweet, but it's naturally sweetened.
Mm-hmm.
It has one ingredient. So you throw some Greek yogurt in the blender with some berries. That's wonderful. That's
mm-hmm.
great. Easy, portable breakfast.
So
nice.
We also hear a lot about gluten-free. So I want to know your thoughts about, if you don't have celiac or don't need to be gluten-free, would you recommend it?
There's really no medical reason to recommend being gluten-free if you don't have celiac disease or you're not having symptoms from gluten.
Right.
Now, when I have a family that comes into my office and they've been having, you know, tummy aches and different symptoms, and they went gluten-free and now they're feeling great and they're healthier, and we go over their food diet and they're getting all the nutrition they need, well, then that's perfectly
sure.
fine. They can continue it. But in general, gluten and whole grains are part of a healthy diet for kids. So unless there's a reason to remove
mm-hmm.
it, I usually don't.
Okay.
people also have this false sense, though, that gluten-free means fewer calories and less carbs, and it doesn't at all. Like the gluten-free pastas, like the rice pastas and all that stuff, they're loaded with carbohydrates and sugars.
Not only that, but some breads, it might not be gluten that's a problem. It may be something else that's a problem. So a lot of supermarket breads, like this particular soft and smooth white bread, there's 30 ingredients in that bread.
Wow.
But the bread I buy has 5 ingredients.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily always the fault of gluten. It could be other things.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
As Dr. Tanya mentioned, if someone eliminates gluten and they're feeling fabulous and eating better, then I'd say that's great.
Yes.
We are speaking with Dr. Tanya Altman and co-author Beth Saltz with the book, What to Feed Your Baby. If you have a question for either of these lovely gals, please give us a call at 323-203-0815. Let's talk about obesity.
Big topic.
Is it still on the rise?
Definitely. Obesity is a huge problem, but I think that, you know, we are getting better with education nowadays, and pediatricians are focusing on it. We're really talking to families about nutrition. It's not really the size of your child and what they weigh. When parents come into my office, I know they're often focused on the growth chart, and I always say, hold on, let's take a step back. Let's take nutrition diet.
Yeah.
Let's see what you're eating. Let's talk about your activity, how much your child is exercising, what you do in your free time, and then let's look at the growth chart.
Right.
Because I can have a very skinny child that is undernourished just as often as I have an overweight child who's undernourished. Mm-hmm. So I like to talk about nutrition and eating healthy.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Do you see a lot of eating disorders in your practice?
Both ways, I guess. Yeah, you're talking about in general.
Anorexia or bulimia?
Definitely, and at a very young age, 10, 11, 12. I personally, Beth speaking, that's not my specialty, so I refer it out to dietitians, and of course they also must work with a therapist because I feel they need someone with that intense specialty who does that every single day.
Yeah.
But I think it's so sad how young it starts.
It's tragic. Unbelievable. You hear kids, girls that are like 8 years old already talking about like they're pinching their stomachs to say that.
Yes.
This
and
is
where
fat
do they get that from?
Right. Exactly.
So usually it's from the parents. So it's really important that when you're getting dressed in the morning and your preschooler is there, that you don't say like, oh, my jeans are so tight, I need to lose a few pounds. Wow. Because they hear everything.
Yes.
And you want to be talking positive, like, oh, mommy feels so healthy today. Let's go for a walk. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I feel so good that I ate, you know, green vegetables and it's already only 10 o'clock in the morning. And you want to try to teach them to have a healthy relationship with food, because they will remember. When you talk to a lot of girls that have eating disorders, they will say, you know what, I remember that voice that my mom used to use when she looked at herself in the mirror when she was getting dressed every morning.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly.
There's something that a lot of moms are doing, and they mean well for themselves, but these fasting programs and cleanses.
Oh, I hate that.
What are you showing your children when you cannot sit at the dinner table with them and eat what they're eating, but instead you're starving yourself on this shake? Is not something that we should be showing our children. So as parents, we really, really need to be aware of the messages that we're sending verbally and non-verbally.
Also, too, like if people lose weight, people are so inclined to be like, oh my God, you look so
fabulous,
great.
Right.
And then other kids hear that and think, oh my God, like I, you know, wow, I should be thinner, or like I've got to lose weight, or, you know, all that, because they hear that positive reinforcement. It's really tricky.
And you have to be so careful about that. And I've seen that actually in doctor's offices. Moms have told me that they've gone in with their tween girl and the doctor came in and said, oh my gosh, you look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl had lost 15 pounds and now her weight was, you know, low normal, but she wasn't healthy.
Right.
And that wasn't the right thing to say.
Exactly.
And so you always have to be very careful and look at the chart and really know, you know, who you're addressing and the words that you use. Just like you wouldn't tell an overweight child, you wouldn't use the word like fat or anything like that in front
of
them. You always want to be careful.
Sure.
Absolutely. What do you think would be the 5 most important foods to eat organic? Like if you could only...
Oh, the dirty dozen?
Yeah, because, you know, everybody just can't afford organic. Although my daughter keeps coaching me to understand that. My daughter's turned into a very, very, very healthy person. She's at the School of Ayurvedics, ancient Indian medicine up north. And so she basically says, but you get so many more vitamins in the organic food that you don't really need to eat as much of it. so that the cost differential ends up being actually not so much. So I'm interested
I think
in your
it's
thoughts.
Important to know what organic foods you're talking about. So if you're talking about fruits and vegetables, yes. If you're talking about processed, packaged organic foods that have 30 ingredients, then
just
I don't know
no.
that it really makes a difference.
Exactly.
You probably shouldn't be eating that anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would start, if you asked for five, so probably 1, 2, and 3, I would, if you can, if your budget allows, because it is more expensive, organic meat,
okay,
dairy, animal products in general, mm-hmm. because that's a very long growing process. There's a lot of exposure to different things. What is the animal, what is their animal feed? The mm-hmm. organic milk, for example, the cows had to have a certain diet. They couldn't have certain antibiotics. So for me, I would choose those animal-based products because, for example, the other day, blueberries, they're on many lists of something to buy organic because it's a soft skin that you eat. However, at the store the other day, blueberries were $6.99 for a teeny tiny little container. So I bought regular blueberries and washed them very well because I believe all fruits and vegetables are healthy.
Yes.
And then there are some vegetables and fruits that don't tend to command a lot of pests anyway, so that even if they're not organic, they're not using a lot of pesticides, like avocados.
Oh, that's an interesting.
And those have thicker skins, right? So then,
right. things
like
that you
melons,
peel usually would be okay to buy not organic if you need to. And I think Beth's point is that we know that if you eat fruits and vegetables, period, you're healthier than people that don't eat fruits and vegetables, whether it's grown organically or conventionally. So yes, if you can, you want to buy the Dirty Dozen, look mm-hmm. at, you know, the Environmental Working Group website, anything where you're eating the skin, make sure that you wash it really well. But again, I would want your child to eat fruit as opposed to not eating fruit. I was at my kid's school a few weeks ago and I heard a mom say to her daughter going through the food line, "Don't eat the grapes, they're not organic." And I thought, oh my gosh, what message are you sending to your daughter? That means she's not eating a fruit for lunch.
My God.
I would rather have them eat the fruit for
sure.
lunch. And if you know that's important to you, you can do that at
yes.
home.
Yes.
Because the food was really healthy that was being served
yeah.
that day.
That's
so
it's
instead, she had chips instead. But her mom was okay with that.
That is so wow. interesting how you can go to the other extreme. Yeah.
And grapes aren't even in season right now.
So that's all about buying local and in season. Talk about that.
Yes.
So I've totally brainwashed my poor little 8-year-old, the daughter of a dietitian, because the other day she wanted more blueberries. The girl eats a container of blueberries pretty much every day during the summer.
That's great.
So it was so funny. She said, "Oh, Mom, can we go to that other market, Jim's Market in Woodland Hills near where I live?" She said, "They have blueberries grown in California. Can you go back and get those?" Because I tell her I'm not going to buy the blueberries from Chile or need in an airplane to arrive here. We are really lucky in that we live in California.
Yeah.
We have access to so many amazing fruits and vegetables. So I think that eating things grown in your own time zone is really, really important if you can. That is also a part of a healthy lifestyle.
So if you had the choice between something organic that was not from here and local that wasn't organic, what do you do?
I would prefer, it depends on
the product.
The product, but I would tend to go for local, seasonal, near here. You know, a lot, it's very expensive for farms to go organic.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive. There are many, many wonderful, if you go to the farmer's market, there's amazing farms, amazing produce, amazing products that are not labeled USDA organic, but still have a heck of a lot to offer.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
And I like to talk to my local growers. I took my kids and my niece and nephew, so I had 5 kids with me at the farmer's market the other weekend. It was a lot of fun. And we talked to everyone about their farms and what they were growing, and we even talked to a local poultry guy, and that was something I'd never done before. I used to go to farmers markets for fruits and vegetables. I never thought about getting chicken there.
Yeah.
And we learned so much, and it was so interesting to learn about the local farms, what the growers do. And a lot of them said that they had been in a 2-year process for getting certified to be organic,
yes.
and they were about to, but it wasn't there yet. So you have to take that into account as well.
That's so true. Yeah, I've
good
heard
info.
About that process. Yeah.
You eat a lot of organic, right?
I was thinking that when you guys were talking, I'm all about organic. I will pay more for organic. I'm scared of all that stuff. I mean, even oranges where you peel, like sometimes I literally can taste like a non-organic orange. Like it just, I can taste like this bitterness, and I don't know if it's psychological, but yeah, I'm all about it. I'll even buy bananas organic as much as I can. But I do agree also, if there's a choice, if it's, you know, I'm not like that lady at the buffet, like I will eat non-organic, but if I'm at the grocery store, I will buy organic. I just think it's worth it.
Especially if you have young kids. I have a 15-month-old, and so I do try whenever possible.
Yes.
But I just like to, you know, educate people that eating the fruits and vegetables is healthy, no matter what the case.
Exactly.
But yes, if you can, then buy locally, go to the farmer's market and buy organic.
Sure, that makes complete sense. Yeah.
I'm getting hungry.
I know, me too. I was just thinking that. So, okay, so I am not a great cook. My husband can attest to this. We were talking about this earlier. What is your advice for people who just either don't have the time to cook, don't want to cook? Like, I mean, I'm sure you hear that quite often. What do you tell them to how to be healthy?
There's many, many options.
Okay.
So I was telling you earlier, I, Beth, did not grow up cooking. My parents really didn't cook. I learned to cook. Mm-hmm. So it's funny because we have so many food programs on, yet we're cooking less than we ever have before.
Oh, that's
it's
so funny.
It's a really funny paradox. So I love certain cooking channels. I love the Pioneer Woman. I think she's very accessible and fun, and the recipes are relatable, and you don't have to have 30 ingredients. You can watch YouTube. There's so many ways to learn. This is why I teach cooking classes, because I really passionately believe that cooking is becoming a lost art, lost science. However, there's lots of other options. There's meal delivery services. There are personal chefs. There are shortcut products. I love many, many shortcut products from Trader Joe's. I get their riced cauliflower. I get their frozen garlic. They have frozen rice you can heat up in a bag. Mm-hmm. So there's so many healthy shortcut options that really make it easier and less intimidating for people.
I usually tell families, you know, it's okay to eat leftovers.
Yeah. You
know, like my husband grew up never eating leftovers because his mom cooked for him every day. So what do we do in our house? I cook like twice a week a ton of food, and we eat a lot of leftovers. I just also tried One Potato, which is a subscription organic food service where they do three meals, all the ingredients, it comes to your doorstep, and it's made for kids to cook with the parents. And my boys love it because they can read the directions and help me cook, and it only takes 20 minutes.
Oh my God.
And
that's
so we order it sometimes once in a while to try it out, depending on what the menu is. And when they make it, even if it's something that they wouldn't necessarily normally like themselves or order, they're more willing to try it.
Oh, I love that.
And really, if you took the time to learn five dishes, maybe sautéed chicken and a roasted vegetable and homemade pancakes, just a few things.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to learn how to cook 50 things. Most of us kind of make the same thing over and over
again.
So you have cookbooks with 1,000 recipes in them, but we don't need so many. So if you just kind of learn a few staples, then you'll be doing really, really well.
And I was going to say, people get intimidated when they hear the word cooking. Like cooking somehow means measuring spoons and measuring cups and, you know, 40 different spices and all that stuff. There's so many things. Like I mean, I don't have a lot of time to cook, but I have, like you said, like five things that as long as I have a steamer and if I have an oven or a barbecue, anything can be made, and so many fresh salads and things like that that are full meals.
Exactly. And you mentioned the word time. Time is so important. We are running around taking our kids to all these lessons and dance classes and all these things. If you kind of take a look at your schedule, if you physically do not have time to cook, if you are home for 3 minutes, how are you going to do that? It's not really going to happen. That's why people do restaurants and things like that. So sometimes you kind of have to take a cold, hard look at your schedule, honestly, and think about how can I switch things a little bit? How can I be home? If you could start by saying, how could I be home one night a week to make a 15-minute dinner? That's great. That is progress. That's wonderful.
People are so
and
overscheduled.
And planning ahead.
Yeah.
So I hear a lot in my office, you know, kids have sports practices in the afternoon and other activities, and so moms often have to resort to driving through the drive-thru. So what I recommend is you pack a lunch. You know, it's okay if your child has a healthy nut butter whole grain sandwich with a banana and carrot sticks and hummus for dinner, even though it's lunch food.
Yeah,
and so I'm always packing lunches for my boys to take with them to sports practice, because as soon as they get in the car, they're starving.
Yes.
And my mother-in-law likes to tease me because she says, that's not dinner, but it's healthy.
Exactly.
As long as it's healthy, it's dinner.
Yeah. You guys are giving me great ideas. I'm going to the Whole Foods right after this.
And I love the family component of the two of you, how you talk about getting the family on board to do these things. That it's not just mom in the kitchen having to do all this stuff and everybody just comes to eat, but everybody can pitch in. Yes. Kids from, what, probably like 3 years old can already start helping in the kitchen if you keep the knives away.
Exactly. They like to rip lettuce. They like to measure ingredients. And also, you know, you can feed your babies those same things that you're eating. You can just puree it at the table. Sure. For the first few months, and then start getting them to little pieces, soft pieces, as soon as possible, and onto what you're eating. So it's not hard to make your own baby food when you're making it for the rest of the family anyway.
That's very true. I was just thinking out loud. Remember Alicia Silverstone? She did something strange with her kid, and I'm curious your thoughts. Like, she would chew her food and then give it directly to her baby. And so, did you hear about this or no? It's so interesting. Yes. So is that sort of like a her way of pureeing the food for the baby? And
it
your thoughts
is, and if you're on a deserted island with no way to puree your baby's food, then I think that's perfectly fine to do.
Yeah.
But the concern is, and a lot of dentists actually have this concern, is that it transfers a lot of adult bacteria to the baby's mouth. And we have a certain type of strep bacteria in our adult mouth that babies aren't born with and they don't have until they start getting teeth, and then it sticks in there, and that's what causes cavities. So that is one of the reasons why you do need to be careful. Now, in a family, you know, we're all sharing things at some degree or another. But there would be increased cavities if you did that. And it is so simple now to simply fork mash it yourself. Or there's all these little baby food pureeing, baby cook type things that you can easily puree it yourself.
Yeah. I remember I got one of those little baby puree. And I did it, like, for the first kid, it was great because you have all this time. And then the second kid, it's like, collected a little dust. But I always thought, I mean, I'm sure you probably say the same thing, that it's probably best to puree it yourself if you can. And then the next best option is, you know, the jarred organic.
Yes, and when I brought my third home, I thought, how am I ever going to have time to do this? And Beth actually came over to my house. And as I was steaming veggies for the rest of the family, she steamed and made more things. She pureed it all and put into little ice cube trays. And I realized how easy it was.
That's great.
And then your baby gets used to eating the different tastes and flavors, because pureed carrots are going to taste different each time you make it, depending on how long you steam it, where you buy it, how you puree it. And the baby food jars have the same consistency and taste, so your child doesn't get used to the variety.
That's a really good point. I never thought about that. That makes complete sense, So they're more open-minded to different flavors.
For a while, also, there was like a fad about the all-raw foods diet type of stuff.
For kids?
Not necessarily for kids, but for people in general.
I think it's still very popular. There's a whole section at Whole Foods, a raw food section, that has never gone above whatever degrees. And I say, whatever floats your boat. If you're happy and healthy and you want to do that, then go right ahead. But I don't want you to preach to me that
I need to do that.
Sure.
I think if you're eating vegetables and protein and real food, I think that, you know what, if you like to cook it, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And for young children, too, some hard things can be choking hazards. So although I love giving nut products and carrots to young babies, you know, a whole nut, a chunk of something is a choking hazard. So you really have to be careful and wait until they're over age 3 for those, you know, hard chunks.
It's nice that Sprouts has, like, cashew pieces.
Oh, that's funny.
They're usually less costly than the whole ones. They all end up in the same place, right?
Right, exactly.
But it's fun to smash them. My boy, when I make certain things and I need the smashed almonds and pecans, my boys will put them in Ziplocs and jump on them and pound on them, and it gets them involved. So I usually don't buy already smashed nuts, because they like to be my smashers.
And they like to eat it that way.
Well, or we put it in, like, to the brownies or whatever we're making.
Oh, that's so smart.
Yeah.
Oh, I could see my boys loving that, like pounding on it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's so much fun. That's a good idea.
And then also, if you're cooking, you have boys?
Yes.
So don't – it's success if they help you and had a good time.
Yes.
Sometimes they'll help you, but they won't eat it. And it's okay.
Oh, that's a really good way to look at it.
It took my 10-year-old probably 6 years before she was really into drinking the smoothies. She would help with the smoothies. She'd put the berries into the blender and do all that, but she really didn't want to drink it for whatever reason. And now she does.
That's so smart. Patience. That's
and fun straws.
Yes.
I was on Dr. Oz last week, and we used fun straws to drink milk, and kids love fun straws. It really helps.
That's such a good idea.
I'm so out of it. Are those, like, different
like
shapes?
Like the curly cue straws. Okay. They even have little glasses ones so they can drink the milk, and it goes around their eyes and into their mouth.
That's so smart. That is a really great idea. I love this. I have so many great ideas. I mean, from you guys, to try. So
Okay, so last minute things that we didn't cover.
Anything that you want to talk about? Or so again, we're talking with Dr. Tanya Altman and Beth Saltz and what to feed your baby.
I see a lot of people, moms and dads, the baby eats great, eats all these things, it's so wonderful, and then they become a toddler and learn the word no. It's very, very normal for toddlers, even preschoolers, to suddenly refuse a food and things that they liked for years, they no longer touch. So this can go two ways. So what often happens is the parent starts only feeding the child what they like and what they'll want to eat, and they sort of give up on some other things. And then we have a vicious cycle of a picky eater and a shorter to cook, and a picky eater and a shorter to cook. So when this inevitably happens, the little picky phase, don't give up and just keep serving the family what the family wants, and the kid kind of has to adapt into it, and that's going to solve a lot of your problems.
Okay.
And even if they go on green vegetable strike for 6 to 12 months, as long as it's still available and they see you eating it, they will go back to eating it. Whereas if it disappears from the house, how are they ever going to go back to eating it?
Sure. Don't they say that you should give a kid 11 times to try a food or something like that? I don't know what the magic
number
is.
There's different studies that have shown 10, 11, 12. I usually say it can take a dozen tries for a child to accept something new. Yeah. And actually, in the toddler years, it can even be harder.
Yes.
It's even 20-something.
Wow.
So keep trying it, and they will go back to it.
Okay. That's
and there are so many foods that have comparable vitamins and minerals and such, so that I think it's good for parents also to not get so fixated on you have to eat broccoli.
Right.
Or if you like green beans, that's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes I have parents who say, oh, my child ate 3 oranges. Is that too much? I cut them off. And I said, that is wonderful. If your child ate 3 oranges, hallelujah. That's just fabulous.
That's really funny. Oh my God. I got to talk to these parents. This is like the buffet lady and this other people. I want them to have my problems, you know? I'd love to be like, my kid eats too many oranges or not organic grapes,
maybe,
you know?
Maybe you could speak very quickly about there are some vitamins that can be toxic if you have too many. That's vitamin A, right?
A, D, E, and K are the fat-soluble vitamins. From diet alone, though, it's virtually impossible to overdose on any of those vitamins.
Okay.
Vitamin D is a vitamin that most people don't get enough of. It's in milk, which is why I love when kids drink milk, but it's also recommended as a supplement now for all ages. And it is something you want to be careful that you don't take too much of, but if you're following the instructions on the vitamin D that your pediatrician recommended or that you buy at the store, you're very unlikely to overdose unless your child gets into it when you're not around, which is why it's important to keep medications and vitamins and supplements up high out of their reach.
Okay. Perfect. Very smart.
Okay. So if you missed this interview, you know you can hear it anytime on the show, the iTunes or Stitcher?
Yes.
Or Blueberry?
Exactly.
All
those.
We're
still learning all this
what
stuff.
What to feed your baby. Do you have websites that you want to give out?
Yes, drtanya.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Dr. Tanya Altman and on Facebook at Dr. Tanya Altman.
And Beth?
And mine is nutritioninthekitchen.org. And from that website, you can link to my Facebook page, and I put lots of cooking tips and funny stories and all sorts of stuff.
And you can enter to win a free cooking class with Beth.
Yay!
Oh, that's so cool.
How exciting.
I'm going to rig that.
When is that starting? When is the class starting?
Still deciding, I guess.
You have classes all the time.
I have classes all the time. I have a class on fish and vegetables this Friday.
Oh,
wow.
That's so cool.
Okay.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. So next week we have Psychic Fleur coming back on. This is somebody who's a friend of yours.
Became friends. I'm big into psychics. Yes. I like love it. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Is she going to do readings for us?
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so excited. Yeah, exactly. She was right on. I'm telling you guys, she channeled my grandma. It was amazing. So it was really cool. Yeah, you were not here that time.
No, I wasn't here that time.
Maybe she
can
help your kids eat more vegetables.
I'm not kidding. Bring that energy in. I'm all about it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so make sure you check out our website at docandtherapist.com. Again, docandtherapist.com. And we love you listening to us, and we love our guests. And I love you, Kelly.
You too. All right, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.